Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to be talking about teleport and gravity, two important projects if you're using Kubernetes. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 529, recorded on May 9th, 2019, Teleport and Gravity. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV, providing effective training with access to virtual labs and practice tests. Visit go.itpro.tv/floss to take advantage of their lowest prices of the season. For an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription, use the code FLOSS30 at checkout. And by Pulseway, the ridiculously cool IT management software that lets you remotely monitor and control IT systems from any device. It's enabling busy admins to fix issues on the go and be more productive. Try it free for 14 days at pulseway.com/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to download and play with right after the show. I bet today is going to be one of those, especially if you're dealing with Kubernetes. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hello, it's good to be back.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you from my usual home studio, which is near Liverpool in the UK. And I apologize if my voice is a bit funny today. I've managed to catch a bit of a cold, but it does make me sound more like Ringo Starr. So that's a bonus in my eyes. So there's always that.
And I'm home again with my Big Blue Yeti, the only place you'll really see the Big Blue Yeti because it weighs so much I can't carry it in my carry-ons because it'll just put me way over the weight limits. 8 pounds, it's just like incredible. Boy, you can put a lot of stuff in there for 8 pounds missing. But I have that new little blue one or the new little nano one, which is really cool. And I've been using that and figured out how to make it better sound and finally got the cable to work right. So I'm happy with all that. For those of you that realize that you're getting this in your podcast feed on Thursday instead of Wednesday, we got bumped yesterday because the network needed my slot. And for those of you that are normally used to watching me at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time or chatting with us at 9:30 Pacific time, that slot wasn't available for me personally. And it would have been today at 9:30 and I had a conference call then. So we moved this to 2 p.m., which is incredibly okay for me because I'm on the West Coast. But Dan, what time is it there?
It's just after 10 p.m. in the evening.
Wow.
Obviously.
So Dan is braving the end of his day to come here and be the co-host for this show. So today's project, scroll, is Teleport and Gravity. No, we didn't reinvent open source gravity, okay? That would be really cool, though. We could just change a few parameters, float off. That's not it, though. So, the co-founder, I think, or the founder, co-founder of the company that's making these two projects is Ev Concevoy, and he'll be on in a few minutes to talk about this and try to explain it all to us. The website says that Teleport is privileged access management for elastic infrastructure. Think sort of a smarter SSH that can do better sharing of the certificates and the keys to pass around so that you can all access all the elements in your cluster. And then their Gravity is the opinionated snapshot-based Kubernetes packaging and management tools. And this is to make it a lot simpler to deploy the same set of tools, the same set of packages to all of your systems in your cluster as needed. So these both sound really cool. They're probably biased towards Kubernetes. So if you don't know what Kubernetes is, pause this show, then go off and learn all about Kubernetes and come back. And it will all make sense off and on. Dan, what do you know about this so far?
Only what I've had chance to research in the last kind of hour or so, which is not a good excuse because it's late in the day for me, so I should have had longer to do this, shouldn't I? I haven't got as many excuses. No, I've been reading up on it and looking at the demonstration videos. Looks really interesting for, operational stuff.
Cool. Yeah. And I did the same thing. I had all day to go research this. Well, no, actually I didn't. This is a normal work day for me, even though it kind of ended at 2 p.m. But so I've been working all day for my client ZipRecruiter because I have a lot of stuff to do for them. And I was trying to get past a couple of hurdles that were really crazy today. I didn't get a lot of chance to research this, but that's why we bring Ev on to actually answer things instead of us having to guess about what that all is. Any more questions before we start going forward?
No. When can we get started is my only question.
Oh, yeah. Right. The earlier, the better for you. I know. Okay. Well, before we do that, though, we do have an important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Experienced IT professionals who deliver comprehensive training at the click of your mouse. Spring is here, and there's never been a better time than now to take advantage of their lowest prices ever. Purchase a standard membership, video only, for $28.50 a month. Upgrade to a premium membership, video plus labs and practice tests, for $42 a month. But wait, you can save even more. IT Pro TV is still honoring our special offer, 30% off for TWIT listeners. That drops the standard membership to only $19.95 per month, or $199 per year, and the premium drops to $29.50 a month, or $295 a year. That's less than $1 a day for a premium membership. You probably spend more on your daily coffee. Stream IT Pro TV's courses live and on demand worldwide. Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, PC, or their iOS or Android apps. New content is added daily, so your training is always aligned with the latest certifications and the most current exams. Episodes go from studio to web in 24 hours. IT Pro TV is CompTIA's official video training partner. 12 CompTIA on-demand courses, CompTIA A+, Network Plus, and Security Plus certificates. Visit go.itpro.tv/floss and use code FLOSS30 to get started with your standard or premium membership today. Don't let another season pass you by without earning your IT certifications. That's go.itpro.tv/floss and use the code FLOSS30 for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV, flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. And we thank IT Pro TV for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Ev, welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for having me.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm joining you from the capital of this great nation, from Washington, D.C.
Oh, I was going to wonder what nation you're talking about. No, sorry, no politics. No politics. Yes, my residence nation, let's put it that way. God. Anyway, so give us a 30,000-foot view. And we're talking about two different projects, so feel free to mix and match as much as you want, no matter what my question is. But what problem are you trying to solve when you're reaching for these two projects?
Absolutely. Actually, I would prefer not to mix and match them, simply because they are built for different layers of your infrastructure. Maybe I'll begin
Let's talk about teleport first, and it looks like the simpler one to understand.
Absolutely. So first of all, both of these projects were built by engineers who all got together when working at Rackspace. At the time, it was probably second biggest cloud provider. So obviously, tens of thousands of customers, 7 different data centers or regions, I should say, all over the world. And the problems that we were trying to solve were basically problems that we saw day to day with being Rackers and working on Rackspace. Teleport is basically modern SSH. If you go back into how SSH came to be and how Linux or Unix does authentication, each server basically allows you to log in or doesn't allow you to log in. And companies today, when they have tens of thousands of virtual instances and all these different clouds, actually struggling to implement simple policies, who can or cannot deploy code into production. Or once your code is running in production, how do you make sure that developers actually don't have access to customer data? SSH simply has no notion of role-based access control. It's kind of binary thing. You either you're in or you're not. And that's what Teleport is. It's fully backwards compatible with your normal SSH tools. So when you type SSH in a command line, and there are all these different flags, so it's fully compatible with how we normally do it. It's open source, and the major benefits that Teleport provides over old school SSH is, first of all, it integrates with Identity Manager. So when you show up for work in the morning, you would first time you touch SSH command, it will bring up single sign login. It could be Active Directory login, or it could be something like Google or even GitHub. And we support, obviously, all kinds of SSO providers that exist out there. And what that thing does, it authenticates you with your role within an organization. So then Teleport issues you an SSH certificate, which is a really, really important difference. Teleport considers SSH keys and passwords to be just fundamentally the wrong way to do authentication. Teleport forces you to do certificates and makes it so easy and transparent to use that there is basically no difference to the end user. So now you, as an engineer, you have this certificate stored in your command line environment. And every time you type SSH in name of a host, for example, which you want to connect to, the certificate will be presented. And certificate has this encrypted metadata in it that tells the environment you're trying to access who you are. Are you a member of DBA team? If you are, then you will be able to access servers that have databases deployed. If you're an intern, for example, then you will deny access to servers that are considered part of production. You can only touch staging or maybe lab environments. And right there, you can probably ask me, well, how does Teleport know which server is a staging, which server is production? And that's the second part of why Teleport is so smart, is because it was built with environment or cluster, as we call it in our documentation, as the fundamental unit. What is it you're authenticating into? So then you can partition your global infrastructure into different projects, into different environments like staging, production, lab, and so on and so forth. And then when you get access to this infrastructure, Teleport allows you to, if you're a compliance officer or if you're a security officer with an organization, Teleport keeps a detailed audit log of what actually is happening across your entire organization. For example, who is logged into what server? And that who, it could be a person. Obviously, it could be your CI/CD pipeline. It could be a robot doing code deployment. All of those actions are recorded for future audit. So you could, for example, examine that, someone deployed something inappropriate into production, and you can go and see who's done that. You will discover that it was a mistake because someone was supposed to push code into staging, but they did it to production instead. So then you can dial in all these different rules to prevent people from doing that in the future. And it doesn't stop there. If you look into what other problems people are running into and using SSH-based tools on a daily basis, you will see that sometimes you want to maybe deploy code into a remote environment that's not easily accessible. Like there's a firewall between you and the place you're deploying to. And you can't always do like a jump host kind of thing. For example, if you want to deploy a firmware upgrade into a self-driving truck, where are you going to put your bastion host, right? It's a self-driving truck. So Teleport allows you to actually do that because in one of its deployment modes, but it allows each SSH node to create this reverse SSH tunnel back into your centrally hosted infrastructure. And that tunnel will be used to allow yourself or maybe your deployment pipeline to SSH back in into this environment. So this allows you to basically treat all of your compute, no matter how distributed it is, as basically one giant deployment target partitioned by function, staging, production, project A, project B. So that's what Teleport is. It's basically cloud native SSH. It's an SSH which I think every company should be using. Even personal projects that people are hosting, Teleport simply gives them this wonderful cloudy experience that we probably always wanted, but didn't realize that it's actually possible with SSH. Because that's another thing that I'm personally passionate about, is that we've done all of this without introducing anything proprietary. We didn't have to reinvent any wheels. All of these capabilities are actually present in SSH protocol, but for a variety of reasons, they've just not been utilized in the industry because it's hard to configure. Even if you Google, for example, certificate-based authentication with OpenSSH, you will see all these long tutorials, and most people just say, you know what, there's too much work. And truth be told, if you go grab peers in Silicon Valley or any other place where lots of engineers hang out and you start talking about security, people often confess that, we have this one user called Jenkins or admin. And it's a private key that we keep in one place. And if you have that key, then you can like do whatever you want. Well, that's not wonderful, isn't it? Not only it's not really secure, but also it prevents you from doing all kinds of fancy things with maybe deploying your software into government or maybe into some other organizations. So Teleport just removes all this red tape and all this unnecessary complexity and makes it easy to use. So when I talk to Teleport users, I just ask them, hey, what would be like one-liner how you can describe what Teleport is? They would just say it's basically proper modern cloud native SSH that doesn't get in the way. Because oftentimes security products, they do get in the way. And back when I was working at Rackspace, I loved hanging out with startups who were running their products on Rackspace. And oftentimes like they would confess that, yeah, we have this elevated security requirements. And we have to use these jump hosts or even several to push our code to production. And it's just like so hard that our engineers, they start deploying a lot of functions into Bastion host itself, simply because it's just easier. Or in some particularly unfortunate cases, they would build basically backdoors into their own software to make their life easier. You don't want that in your organization. You want everything to be easy. You want everything to be fun. You want people actually to enjoy what they do. Deploying code is actually no one's job. It shouldn't be. It should be something that robots do for us. But at the same time, you want everything to be secure, compliant, and speaking of compliance, like everything that you do with your infrastructure using Teleport is recorded. So it actually has this web UI, which looks kind of similar to YouTube, where you can see recordings of everything that happened in the infrastructure. Like every character you type on the keyboard will be recorded. And yes, of course, it's not a good practice to manually SSH into machines, especially in production. But, you know, things happen. Sometimes we have to do it. And when you do, Teleport allows you to record all of the sessions for compliance, security purposes, but also for educational purposes. So you can do, for example, things like, hey, this is how you fix like a failover between two Postgres, like master and slave. And you can put it as a tutorial on your internal network or something. So it's one of the most popular Teleport features. So that's Teleport. I hope it was understandable. I enjoyed talking about Teleport. I was contributing to it, especially in the beginning, and it's always fun to bump into users of open source Teleport when you go to conferences and stuff. I definitely scratched my own itch when we started working on it.
Well, we're almost out of time, but thank you for coming onto the show. No, just kidding. We're not almost out of time. I'm just goofing with you. That was a brilliant first answer, though. Dan and I were both chatting in the back chat that it's always great when a guest can actually not have to have us ask all the questions we have. But a couple of points you hit that I wanted to kind of come up on. So Teleport is giving, when I'm doing the single sign-on, Teleport's going to assign me a role. Is that a role based only on whether I can log into or not log into a machine, or is it more finely grained than that?
It's more fine-grained. So first of all, it's not Teleport who assigning you the role. That's another thing that organizations already have, org structures. These org structures that usually they encoded and stored in some kind of identity manager, like Active Directory being one a popular option. So when you log in using SSO, the group or groups you are a member of, they're given to Teleport by the identity manager. So Teleport sees that you are, for example, that you're a developer, that you are a member of this project called, I don't know, like Dashboard or something, and it will see that you have there is your email address. That's your ID. It's actually your email address most often. It's not some kind of name like root or admin. And then using Teleport, your security administrator or your NetSec professional, let's put it this way, so what they can say is that if you're a member of that group in Active Directory, for example, you should be allowed to forward ports. You should be allowed to SSH into machines that have a specific label applied to them, for example, production or staging. Because in Teleport world, you can label specific nodes with all these different colors. And each node can have multiple colors, for example. And then you can do really fancy things. You could say, hey, Teleport, run this command periodically, and the command will say if this machine is running, let's say, a Postgres database or MongoDB database, and if it does, then the server gets this label where it will say that its role is a database machine. And then you can define a rule that access to these machines is only given to people who belong to DBA group in Active Directory. And it becomes especially interesting if you're running in cloud environments with things auto-scaling continuously, or when one machine, for example, leaves staging environment and joins production or vice versa. People do that, especially with reserved instances on AWS. In this case, Teleport will do an interesting thing where the permissions, they will be following a specific workload. So for example, if your job is to periodically check on how MongoDB is doing, and MongoDB is traveling around on your AWS account, so Teleport will only give you access to nodes where MongoDB is present at this moment. And if it gets moved somewhere else, you will automatically lose access to nodes where it used to be, and you're given access to nodes where it is now. So these are things that are pretty crazy to think of. Like, how would you implement it using regular SSH? So with Teleport, you can do that.
But it still says... go ahead, sorry.
But when you also trying to log in into the machine, you always have to pick which user you're going to assume once you are on that machine. And then you can define additional restrictions, like can you become root on these machines? And it could be a part group. Again, your group that you're in, they define if you can or cannot get root in certain boxes. Maybe on certain machines, you can only be a guest, for example, if you do have users like that.
So the second level of granularity then would be that once Teleport figures out who I am, and which will give me sort of the first level of granularity, which is what machines I can access, I also have some method of selecting whether I want to be root on that box or the web server administrator or the MongoDB administrator. And I may not be able to be all those depending on what the identity system says, right?
Yeah. And there was another level which is skipped in the beginning where you can dial in which clusters you can authenticate into. It's just much easier to say, for example, that unless you're a member of this team, you just can't touch production. So it's a very simple rule, and it's really common, actually. A lot of organizations want that. So instead of just labeling all these boxes like production, 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 I just say, hey, you just don't touch this cluster, that's production cluster.
Okay, well, we'll get back to Teleport in a little bit, but I want to also make sure that we cover gravity in the front of the show. So what's gravity? When would you reach for that?
Oh, gravity is... It's a very unusual Kubernetes project. Have you ever been to KubeCon?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's very interesting scene. If you go to this conference, you're walking around looking at all these booths and all these different vendors. They have fantastic products for Kubernetes. But there's also this movement that different companies, they're promoting Kubernetes distributions. And oftentimes, when people discover Gravity, they're asking us, oh, is that another Kubernetes distribution? And the answer is a strong no, because we all came from Rackspace. We've been exposed to OpenStack and all these different OpenStack distros and how we're not compatible with each other and how much pain it was causing and that the community was always fractured a little bit. Gravity is not Kubernetes distribution. What Gravity allows you to do, it allows you to take your Kubernetes cluster with all of your applications inside and save it all into one file. So internally, we like to say that we do snapshotting of Kubernetes, but technically it's not a snapshot. Maybe a closer equivalent would be an image. That image includes everything. It includes every single layer of every single container of every single application that you have deployed. It will include all of Kubernetes resources, things like load balancers and secrets and whatnot. And it will also include Kubernetes itself, which is why it's so unusual and so interesting. And the idea here is that if you make that image, you can give that image to me. And I will take it, and I will have a full replica of the original Kubernetes cluster running on my Amazon account or in my basement. It actually doesn't matter. So you can do crazy things. I could, for example, text you like, hey, I just emailed you my Kubernetes cluster. And that would literally mean I just emailed you everything that you need to create the cluster. Your servers or your environment, they don't even have to be connected to the internet because the image contains everything. So now you could do interesting things. You could say, hey, you can just come to my website and you can download my Kubernetes application and try it. Because one thing that I personally always hated about cloud software And I started my career just doing desktop software, which most of us did in late 90s and early 2000s, was that cloud software is, even though it's extremely powerful because it runs in a data center, it's always chained to this one environment where it was created, which is extremely annoying. We had this company we started in like 2008. It's called Mailgun. It's email delivery service. It's still around, and it was massive SaaS application that required a lot of resources to run, and also required a lot of people to just basically sit around and make sure it doesn't die. That's what DevOps is about. It's just making sure that the same application that keeps running in the same place. Compare this to desktop experience where you download desktop software, and on Apple, for example, it's often just a single file. It's this image, and you click on it, and you have the software. So the simplicity of distribution is just on a different level. And the fact that you could never do that with cloud-based software was driving me insane. I've met people, for example, who say, you know what, we're running in one AWS region, and we can't even go to second region because technically no one really knows how everything is deployed. Yeah, sure, we have the CI/CD pipelines everywhere. We have all this like monitoring set up, but to replicate all of that across all of our products in a different region, we can't even do that. And when I was meeting customers who were considering switching cloud providers, like for example, maybe going from Azure to Amazon or Google or Rackspace, they would often say that it's a great idea. This provider is clearly better for us, but we just can't take our stuff from here and move it over there. Like things are just not movable in principle, because it's cloud software. It's completely super glued to the environment where it was originally created. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, I remember that VMware, I remember they used to have these ads in airports, like lift and ship applications, and application portability used to be a thing. And it worked because of virtualization, because they would capture the state of a machine, of a virtual machine, in a VM image, and they would give that, they would move the image around. So that's what application portability used to be called. And then we started thinking, well, wouldn't it be awesome if we could just only figure out a way how we could make an image of your entire Amazon account, right? But we could never figure out how to do that. And look, plenty of companies tried. I worked on a corp dev team shortly looking for startups who had technology, something like this, that we could acquire. And frankly, there was just nothing like that ever existed. But then Kubernetes came around, and Kubernetes gave us interesting capability. It gives you full introspection into your cloud environment. So if your app, or if you have multiple apps running on Kubernetes, you can actually use Kubernetes API just to log in and go inside, and you will see every single process. You will see every single TCP IP port, every volume, secret, configuration file, every certificate, basically anything that application consists of is really neatly declared within Kubernetes. You can find all of that. You don't even need to have a fully running Kubernetes cluster. You could basically dump all of your Kubernetes definitions, these Kubernetes resources, into a directory, and you can scan all of these YAML or JSON files, and you will discover what components this application consists of. And then what you can do, just go, you can connect to your Docker registry, and you can download all these components, and you can start building this image. And the only thing that's missing then is it's Kubernetes itself, which for us was the biggest challenge, because initially we thought, well, we could do this image thing, but then you could move it around. But in order to instantiate all of your apps, you would need a fully functional Kubernetes cluster, which is not always guaranteed to be available. It would suck if you downloaded someone's cloud application as an open source thing, and you couldn't run it as easily as Docker runs, right? It will tell you, oh, you need me, give me a fully functional Kubernetes cluster. So then we figured out a way how to package Kubernetes into the image itself. And now this image that Gravity makes for you, it's fully autonomous image that you can think about as a Docker file, as a Docker image, but it includes your entire environment. With all of your apps, with all of your like monitoring systems, you can package anything you want into it. And then you unpack it and it just runs. So it includes a little component which we like to call internally Kubernetes Hypervisor, because we like this analogy as to how virtualization images can run you a virtual appliance, and we like to think of Gravity as a multi-node appliance. So you unpack this file and you run it, and this whole thing instantiates and start running. You have fully functional Kubernetes with all these applications running inside. Then you can start adding more servers, more nodes to this cluster if you want to. And then in the end, you have this full environment with maybe other like 50 or 500 servers. So that is a fundamentally very new and very different way to quickly create Kubernetes clusters on a template. So instead of having all these different scripts that do and produce these clusters, and they're just going to sit and their configuration drift over time, what Gravity creates, it creates this completely autonomous clusters into these images. And all of these clusters, that's the cool part, they have teleport built into them. And what that means is that you can configure all of these clusters to actually be connected into this distributed virtual, I'll call it mesh, because it sounds cool, although it's not the mesh. But the idea is, if I publish my Gravity image on my website, and let's say a million people download it, and they will all instantiate my cloud application inside of their own cloud accounts, I will actually see all of them running online, because all of them have teleport embedded, and there is this option that makes teleport dial back. So you will see every single instance of your original cluster. And what this allows you to do, it allows you to say, hey, I have a new version of the application. And all the users, they will get this alert, like, oh, there is a new version available. You can click a button, and it will update itself. So you see, we're trying to replicate software distribution that exists in desktop world. You know how, like, your Windows updates itself, and your Mac OS updates itself, and your iPhone, iOS updates itself? So we've built that for our cloud-native software. So now you can actually run your application globally. You can download, like, you can allow your customers to download your cloud-native app, and they could put it on their own Amazon account. So you don't have to pay for hosting anymore. And when the new version of your software comes out, they just get these updates. So now you can run your software theoretically on millions and millions of machines, distributed across millions and millions of customers all over the globe, without really any hosting costs. So it's almost like a new way of distributing and running software. And initially, we developed this technology to allow SaaS companies in the Valley, primarily, to deploy their SaaS solutions on-premise into, I don't know, government organizations or banks and finance. So that was the initial use case. But then eventually we just realized, it's a really good way to run Kubernetes native apps even on your own Amazon account, because it allows you to have like 50 Kubernetes clusters with the same operational overhead as having just one. And then we decided to open source it simply because, hey, Teleport is open source. We fundamentally like to be open source company. And we open sourced Gravity very recently, just a few months ago. And now it's also starting to gain popularity because it's just a very different. You see, most Kubernetes users, they see Kubernetes as an orchestrator, as an operating system for a data center. It allows them to intelligently schedule jobs and increase infrastructure utilization. These are all fantastic goals. That's what Kubernetes was built for. I think with this project, we're fairly unique in that we look at Kubernetes from a completely different angle. We look at it as a strictly application portability vehicle. You know how GRE was a thing for Java? So you have your Java app, like it's a jar file or something. And if you bundle it with the GRE itself, which is a Java runtime engine, you can just move it around, and in theory, it will run on any machine. So that's what Kubernetes is to us. It's a GRE for cluster-level software. So you can package the entire cluster, and you can move it around. It's a big project, though. So we've spent a lot of time working on it and interacting with early users. It has a lot of features that may be not obvious. So, for example, if you want to create a new Kubernetes cluster from scratch, and you're not particularly technical when it comes to Kubernetes guts, and you shouldn't be, to be honest. Again, developer's job is to be smart and educated and passionate about the problem they're solving. Not everyone should be Kubernetes expert. But this thing creates Kubernetes cluster from scratch. And there is a million reasons why a cluster that you might create will not really work reliably. There are like kernel variables that need to be set just right. There are certain file systems you should or should not be using. There are certain Docker versions you should not be using. Authentication needs to be done right. So all of this, like etcd, needs to be continuously reconfigured based on the size of your cluster. So all of these things are baked into Gravity itself. So it actually has this fairly powerful thing. It's like a robot that has all the Kubernetes operational knowledge, and it's running Kubernetes for you. It will tell you, for example, like, oh, your disk latency is too high. Your Kubernetes will not run well here. Just think about like how often we think about disk latency. But this problem actually happens in production with real-world Kubernetes clusters. So this thing will actually measure all these things for you. It will say that, oh, you have DNS, like local DNS on your network, but it might actually be producing results that are not compliant with DNS spec. And believe me, it actually happened in production. And that will make Kubernetes misbehave. But because we know about it, we can proactively tell you about all these different things that can possibly be wrong about your infrastructure. But if you check all the boxes and application gets up and running, it's sure if I could be using this word, but I'll say indestructible. So it's a production hardened thing that runs by itself. So, and when people ask, like, well, why would I need something hardened? And my answer is like, well, wouldn't all of us benefit from a cloud software being like running reliably for years without having an army of DevOps people standing around making sure it doesn't die? That would be cool. But also, if you have a crazy use case, like you need your Kubernetes cluster to run on a satellite, you're not launching a site reliability engineer with the satellite into space. It needs to exist there by itself. Or if you need to run Kubernetes cluster on an oil well or something. So in these environments, appliance-like capability and reliability is highly desirable. And that's what Gravity provides.
Wow. You know, that's so much information in one breath. I think you did that in one breath, right? It sounded like that. Dan has been whispering in my ear that he wants to ask some questions so that I can't have all the fun. But before we do that, I do have a very important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Pulseway. Imagine being able to manage and control your entire IT environment from the palm of your hand, reset a user's password from your phone, or kill a process that's slowing down a critical machine while taking a stroll in a park. Well, you don't need to imagine. Pulseway lets you monitor, manage, and control all your Windows, Linux, and Mac systems from anywhere using any device, including your smartphone. You can monitor everything, see real-time status, system resources, and logged-in users, view network performance, Windows updates, IIS, SQL Server, Exchange, and Active Directory, monitor VMware, Hyper-V, and SNMP-enabled devices, and more. Always be in control. Ability to react to issues right away and fix problems on the go. You can run commands in Terminal, manage running processes, restart services, apply critical updates, restart systems, etc. Automate everything by creating and deploying custom scripts to automate all your IT tasks, saving time and increasing your overall efficiency. You can automate anything from backup jobs to security checks on schedule or on demand at any time from a device closest to you. With Patch Management, you can scan, install, and update all your systems on the go. You can do it on demand or schedule it to be executed on a particular date. Quickly and effortlessly connect to a computer as if you were sitting right in front of it without opening any ports or creating any firewall rules with a remote desktop control. It switches between screens, sends keystrokes, and controls the mouse without having to travel to the machine. Visit Pulseway.com/twit and learn how thousands of organizations and system admins are making their IT environment more efficient and secure. Try it for free for 14 days at Pulseway.com/TWIT. And we thank Pulseway for their support of Floss Weekly. And Dan, here's your chance. Go.
Thanks very much, Randall. Ev, so this is really fascinating. There's so much information in there to kind of, as Randall said, to kind of unpack. One thing I was really curious about was a bit to do with the how you came to make these tools themselves. And I noticed that you're using Go. They're all written in Go. So why did you come to choose Go? Was there a specific reason for that?
Well, yes, of course. The short answer is there is basically no other language that comes even close to capabilities that Go provides. So one of them is that this this new generation of orchestration and cloud tools, like Docker itself and Kubernetes and projects like etcd, they're all written in Go. So therefore, the ecosystem already exists. So the necessary libraries are easily available, and also in interacting with all these other components written in this language is just very natural using Go. But if it's not Go, what else can it possibly be? You will not be able to convince me that C would be the appropriate solution. It will probably take us forever, and there probably would be some vulnerabilities. Rust might be another candidate, but when we started working on it, Rust was just not mature enough. I hear it's getting more stable these days.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That was Randall's cue to jump in and say Perl, but I know he wasn't going to do that. I thought he might when you said, what else could it be? But anyway, so it makes sense, yeah, because as you say, there's so much, I mean, the ecosystem, it's already there. It's such a huge, I mean, both of these tools, particularly Gravity, is such a huge kind of tool. How many people are working on it then? You must have quite a lot of, a big team on this, I imagine.
So Gravitational is, we're about 20 people now, and as I said earlier, you don't need a lot of time to type like a piece of code in the keyboard if solution is already in your head. And as I said, we've been thinking about these problems way before we started working on it. So therefore, by the time we actually decided to do it, we already had a pretty good idea of what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. So that definitely helped.
Yeah, you mentioned before scratching your own itch, and that's basically what you've just said, isn't it? It must be so useful to, you've got all this experience, you've got other people on the team, you've got these experience of things that frustrated you, which you were telling us about before. So you already had the desire to fix these things.
Yeah, pretty much. The previous company we've started was, again, at Mailgun. We always had this people from China and Europe that would always complain that latency from Amsterdam to Dallas was too high, and we should have had another region somewhere in Europe. But we would just, every time we would look into doing this project, we're thinking, oh my God, it's just impossible. If only we could save all of Mailgun infrastructure into a single image, copy it once to Europe, and then just have exact full replica, that would be awesome. So that's really where it came from.
Excellent. And why did you call it Gravitational, just out of interest, the company?
Well, I could be talking for hours about it, but like the environment, the typical cloud environment of most SaaS companies is quite chaotic. And so what's missing there is gravity, some kind of fundamental force that governs how software moves around and just makes everything predictable, neat, and easy to reason about. So we felt like gravity is missing in the software world. And we thought that the product we should build, we should call it Gravity, because it really makes everything easy to understand. And from there, we named the company Gravitational.
Oh, excellent. I was thinking of gravity and Newton and all these other things. There's a lot of those kind of names are in software, isn't there? Obviously, scientists and stuff as well. Excellent. Well, so, one of the things... Sorry, go on.
No, I just wanted to make a maybe unfortunate joke that a lot of software engineers, they basically failed scientists. That's definitely the case.
Well, computer scientists, maybe. That's a, you know, it's a type of scientist, I suppose. One of the things that we haven't really talked about, I don't think in massive depth yet, is the web interface and so on, which is really impressive. I'm going a bit back to Teleport now as well. I was looking at some of the demonstrations for Teleport before and how you can share your sessions with other people and see what they're doing and collaborate and stuff. So tell us a bit about the web, you know, the web side of this and the web, front end and so on, because it seems incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. The underlying motivation for the for web UI is that I personally have like a small cloud of random Linux devices in my house. I have Raspberry Pis, I have a open NAS box, I have all kinds of stuff. And sometimes I'd be at someone's house, and that person only has like an iPad or Windows. And if I wanted to show something cool that I have running on my server at home, I could never really do that because I didn't take my my laptop with me, and this person only has Windows. And Windows is not, like, up until very recently, there was just not a good SSH story on Windows. But capabilities of modern browsers are pretty incredible. So we basically treat the web UI as a kind of cross-platform user interface you could use to interact with your cloud. So that's where it came from. And I'm hoping to make it even better in the future. So it'll be good enough that people will finally stop asking for a native Windows client.
Yeah, I mean, that would be really useful, actually, because, I mean, I think everybody still uses PuTTY, don't they, on Windows for SSH and stuff, and that's correct. Not, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions on anything. I mean, it's great, but it could be better, shall we say. it could be a better experience. Now we'll get people writing in to tell us about PowerShell and all the things it can do and so on, maybe, I don't know. We'll see. So, where are you going next with this, then? Because you've got, I mean, this 3.0 release is relatively new, isn't it? So are you guys kind of getting ready to decide what you want to do and roadmapping for new things?
Absolutely. So the I'm not sure how much I can disclose about upcoming releases of Teleport, but at the same time, look, it's an open source project. You can just watch the history of commits and you will see where we're going. And on Teleport side, the one exciting area is that we've been continuously getting these requests from, let's say, Internet of Things community, people who build, I don't know, self-driving vehicles, drones, or medical devices that go into hospitals, or even some like expensive things you can purchase and put in your house. The ability to SSH into these things, sometimes it's very useful. The existing Teleport architecture already allows you to do that in some degree, but it's a little bit hard to manage. So this upcoming Teleport version, which we haven't figured out what we're going to call it yet, it basically allows you to have like a giant cloud of your servers running inside of people's houses, inside of people's cars. It's fabulously secure, of course, and it gives you this capability to SSH into anything. My favorite story from an open source user, he reached out to us and so we got on the phone, had some questions. I liked what he was doing with it. He was SSHing into cattle. So he told us that he has this product he's working on. It's like it's a microchip that goes onto a collar that you put on a cow. And then he has these cows walking around. I'm assuming it's maybe some kind of like cattle management software. And it was funny that he was actually like SSHing into cattle. You know how in the cloud computing industry we always say, don't treat your servers as pets, treat them as cattle. And now we have this guy who actually uses SSH to manage his cows. So it was pretty funny. So for folks like him to build systems that use SSH for this capability, that's what the upcoming version of Teleport is optimized for. And another major initiative that we're working on is helping companies become FedRAMP compliant. FedRAMP, if you're, do you want me to go there? Is it interesting to your audience?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, if you could summarize it very quickly.
Yeah, sure. So FedRAMP was the standard that that government came up with that basically it governs how you deliver multi-tenant cloud software to, let's say, government customers. So how you isolate tenants from each other, how you guarantee that that it's basically secure for government to use your infrastructure. And now it's getting increasingly more and more adopted by companies who want to sell like large deals to some other companies who treat security seriously. And when you start implementing this FedRAMP compliance, you basically go like checkbox after checkbox. A lot of them actually going to be easy to do. Like, yeah, it's a second factor, sure. Encrypted storage, easy. But it kind of falls apart when you get down to infrastructure level, like SSH itself. Like, do you use SSO for SSH? Do you use list of approved ciphers? And this is where people actually get in trouble because they don't know. And the answer probably no. So this upcoming version of Teleport will just support FedRAMP out of the box. So then if you're going through FedRAMP compliance because you want to close like a big deal with a DoD or something, switch to Teleport and you will just have it for free.
Wow. So, you know, what's scary is we're almost out of time, and there's so much more we could have covered. You know, when you first wrote in, or your PR person wrote in and said, should this be two shows or just one? I looked at the topics and went, I can probably put them both in one show. Now I realize it probably should have been two shows. Oh, well. Oh, well. I'm learning. I've only been doing the show for 12 years now, so sometimes I just get a little sidetracked. So given that we're almost out of time, we've talked about a lot of things, but is there any burning urgent things that we didn't cover in this show that you want our audience to be aware of?
Well, sometimes people ask us, how do we make money? Because after all, both products are open source. And, they're obvious vehicles for companies like us to make money is that most corporations, they prefer to have a commercial vendor by their side. So commercial support is obviously a big deal, things like SLAs. And we also do have premium features that are only available to enterprise users. But without even going there, I want your listeners and viewers to know that we're not trying to like intentionally cripple our open source products. This is a company that was founded by engineers and run by engineers. So our open source versions are basically extremely capable, and we continue to be very much invested in making sure that open source community is happy. So I don't want this to be seen as a sales pitch to go try our open source crippled software so we can upsell you. No, it's good. It's good in open source form, and I hope you can enjoy it. And most importantly, try to participate. If you found a bug in documentation, send us a pull request. It's a very easy way to contribute, and it's very accessible and available to almost everyone.
Well, seeing this has been, I shouldn't be asking any more questions, but keep the answer to this short. Do you have a significant out committee outside your company now? Are people really participating in providing features or a bug request? Bug request? Yeah, I want a bug. you know what I mean. Are people outside starting to use this?
So absolutely, yes. For example, initial implementation of YubiKeys, you know, it's this USB second factor devices that sure. Teleport as, I believe it was contributed from the outside, and things like support for external storage for secrets also came as a suggestion. And not to mention too that we're working closely with open source security professionals. So companies like Kiro 53, they've done like a line by line security audit of Teleport source code. And these reports are available for everyone to see. That's this advantage you have being an open source product is that if you're proud of the quality of something you've made, and there's a credible people from the community who can come in and contribute their opinion to the fact that yes, indeed, it's secure and it works. So so all of these community developments are we're happy about.
Yeah, well, I'm happy about that too, because open source really works when you really start building a community. And you don't just publish your source and then all your development's done internally and doesn't ever get revealed and a lot of really stupid things. So people have done stupid things over the years, and I tell you, we've had not to belittle any of my guests, but let's just say there's been a variety of ways to do open source, and we've covered the entire spectrum on the show. So, so two final quick questions. One, what is your favorite programming language?
My favorite programming language is not JavaScript. That's an easy answer. Okay. And it would probably be C, because that's the language I started my career with. And it's not the language I would build system with, but there's still something about it that's still my favorite.
Cool. And your favorite text editor?
Oh, that's an easy one. VI, of course. What else?
VI, wow, okay. I never win on that one anymore. I'm an Emacs guy and now a VS Code guy. So I did VI back when that wasn't when new Emacs wasn't around. So way before back in the early days. So, and way before Vim existed, I might not have moved away. Could I have programmed it, because Vim was actually a little bit cooler, but I don't want to reinvest my time one more time to learn VI. I still occasionally remember the VI keystrokes, but just barely. But at least I can usually get out of the editor. I know how to do that.
See, it's also job security. If you make money programming with your own hands and you lose a finger, if you're a Mac user, you're probably going to suffer. Like, I can lose a hand. Yes. My productivity will suffer because I don't really need that many fingers to be productive in VI.
You should have seen me when my arm was in a cast and I was trying to do Emacs stuff. And so I luckily the Mac has what they call sticky keys. So I would press the escape key and then press the next key. It was like, I had to keep hitting the keys. So everything took me about three times as long because I couldn't hold the meta keys down because I didn't have anything but one hand. So, okay, enough of that. Hey, this has been a great show. Come back in a couple of years. Let us know how the project went after that. And I wish you all the luck on getting this stuff out there. It sounds like you're filling a nice niche out there. So hopefully more people will be aware of this because of this show. So thanks for coming on the show and spending your time telling us about it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Yes, that was Ev Kontsoy talking to us about teleport and gravity. So, Dan, what'd you think?
Yeah, it's really, really fascinating. So much to get through, as you said. I think there's probably more than we thought there was going to be. You know, there's so much to these tools, which is great, but we can learn more about them. I think the Ev mentioned there during one of his towards the end about IoT stuff, and I can imagine particularly teleport, and there's a lot of stuff going on with Docker now in IoT, which is interesting. So I could see a lot of that becoming really, really relevant when you've got lots of devices out in the field now. You know, all these, he mentioned self-driving cars, but you know, it could be anything really that you need to manage, and teleport and gravity could be really interesting ways of doing that. So it's probably a growing sector, I would think.
Yeah, and there was, like I said, I was a little shocked. There's a lot more to these two projects, and gravity is also where's his name? Anyway, his company is
Gravitational.
Gravitational. There we go. I knew it had an L at the end. I couldn't figure out what it was. They let anybody do this show, apparently. Anyway, there's a lot more stuff in the GitHub than just these two projects. So follow the GitHub links that'll be in the show notes, and then go up one level and poke around. There's a bunch of other really cool stuff. So I imagine anything that's there is open source, because why else would it be on GitHub? But take a look and see if there's licensing requirements, and take a look and make sure the thing is complete that you want to do. Well, like I said, we're almost out of time, so let me run down the upcoming guests. So not too many new people, just one added since last week, but it's an important one. You'll see why when we get there. So next week, we've got the RavenDB NoSQL document database. That sounds like fun. So a document database everybody went NoSQL for a while, and then everybody learned how junky that was for some applications because there weren't indexes in the right place and things like that. But it's kind of swinging back the other way. So RavenDB, I think, is one of those that's got a good compromise between NoSQL and SQL. Berrios Backup is a 100% open source fork of the backup project from bacula.org. And we'll probably talk about forking on that show, because it's important to understand why open source lets us occasionally do we call them pitchforks because they're hostile, because something's been taken over. The fork has been in development since late 2010, and it has a lot of new features. We're going to have a representative from the IBM cloud platform here, and I hope it is a technical person and not a salesperson. I hate that when I do that. But it's a full-stack cloud platform that spans public, private, and hybrid environments. I saw these guys at Cloud Foundry. Cloud Foundry is trying to put in the necessary meta layers so you can easily move your software on all these different platforms or host it yourself. He's going to talk to us about Cloud Foundry and IBM's involvement with that. He might even make a pitch that you might want to run it on their platform. I'll have to let him do that because he's on the show. So CryptPad is after that, which is a private by design alternative to popular office tools and cloud services. All the content stored on CryptPad is encrypted before being sent, which means nobody can access your data unless you give them the keys, not even CryptPad. Redis update. Redis is an open source in-memory data structure, so similar to a NoSQL database, but it also has other features. You can use it as a cache, use it as a message broker. I think one of my previous clients was using Redis as their sort of intermediate cache, and it has all sorts of data structures. Hyperlog logs, woohoo! Be a lot of jargon in that show, I'm sure it has. OPSI, right after that, is an open source client management system to manage heterogeneous environments. It enables the deployment and configuration from OSs and software on Windows and Linux computers. I think I saw them at Scale, and they finally perked up and got themselves a date. Here's the one I added, and I know you've all been asking for this. You have been asking for this, and you'll see why. It's the CX language. Boy, does that sound exciting. It's a general-purpose interpreted and compiled programming language with a very strict type system and a syntax similar to Golang. CX provides a new programming paradigm based on the concept of affordances. And what are you going to use those affordances for? You're going to use it to write blockchain code. Woohoo! Blockchain! Yay! That's where I need the streamers coming down. Yeah, blockchain! For those of you who've been waiting for the next blockchain show, that's going to be interesting. But it's more than just about blockchain. It's actually about this nice new generic language these guys are creating. You can use it to create command line apps and things like that. So, that's all been good. So that's what we got coming up. Go to the homepage for this show, twit.tv/floss. You'll see the link there to our upcoming guests to see the exact specific schedule of all those. And you'll see the ones we're working on the short list. If you have a project that's not on there, you just have the project leader or community coordinator email me. Please don't just tweet, boy, you ought to be on this show. Contact them. I'm not going to listen to a tweet. I have to then put my email address in my... Well, it's already on my Twitter page, but that's okay. And my email address is also on the twit.tv/floss page, too. So you can go there. So you can follow us on at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Merlin on Twitter. I'm just about to set up a medium.com account for Floss Weekly, because apparently you can set it up so that you have essentially a magazine that can have multiple authors, because I always want to make sure that my co-hosts can post things when I'm away, or just if they want to make comments on the stuff that we're talking about, or just if they find something interesting about open source. So we had that with Google Plus, but Google Plus no longer has us. At Merlin on Twitter. I'm going to be at the Perl Conference, also known as YAPSE, in Pittsburgh in mid-June. I'm just press there. I'm not doing any kind of speaking, although I might do a 5-minute lightning talk on Flutter again. Yay. I'm going to be at OSCON in my hometown in mid-July, which would be nice. I can just take the MAX train right straight to downtown, so that'll be fun for me. No airplanes for that one. And I've just been approved as press at All Things Open. I really love that show. It's just a huge show, and it's bigger and bigger every year. It's something like 5,000 attendees. It's just a monster show. I'm going to be there in mid-October. I put in a call for papers. I put in a possible Flutter talk. I'm actually going to... completely from scratch, write a Flutter app live in the 45 minutes they give me. That's just going to go so sideways. I can already tell. I'm doing like the riskiest thing I could possibly do on a stage. No slides, just my VS Code display and the simulator display. Anyway, so that's the only things I have scheduled right now this year. I might have a couple more coming up soon. Anything you want to plug there, Dan?
Yeah, well, speaking of events, actually, you've kind of led me into this, but we have another Og Camp coming up this year, which is the largest Linux free software, open source, science, culture, all kinds of stuff going on there, event in the UK, which I helped to organize. And Simon Phipps is involved as well, so there's a definite Floss Weekly link. Simon's on the team as well. And we're in Manchester in October. Now, the call for papers is currently open during May. So if you can get to the UK in October on the 19th and 20th, and you're interested in talking, then please do go to ogcamp.org. That's ogcamp.org. And there's a link on the menu there for the call for papers. And I think it's even on the front page. So you can then submit your pitch and let us know what you'd like to do. And also, if anybody listening to or watching this, works for a company you think might be interested in sponsoring the event, we could always use that. So there's a sponsors link, ogcamp.org/sponsors, where you can get the pack and other things. Generally find out more. And I hope many Floss Weekly listeners will be able to come and join us and have fun. It's a free weekend, free as in beer and free as in freedom as well. Come along and join us in Manchester. If you want to talk to me about that, you can get me on Twitter. It's at MethodDan, which is in the footer there if you're watching, or head to danlynch.org. And find me there.
Wow, I was just thinking those dates sounded really close to familiar. It turns out All Things Open is in Raleigh, North Carolina, East Coast, on the 13th through 15th. Oh. So it would really nicely dovetail with me flying across the pond and getting there.
We could do it like live aid
for Hog Camp. Yeah.
You can do it live aid. Do one end at that end and then do the flying over the Atlantic and do the other end at this end.
And then I've got a GDE summit coming up in the 26th and 27th. So I just need to have some way to get back and probably home for a few days before I go down to that. I think that's in Mountain View, as I recall, because it's all things Google. So anyway, we're running over time now. I better just stop here. And I want to thank you all for hanging out with us. Dan, especially thank you for staying up late and having enough coffee to keep your eyes open, right?
Yeah. No problem. Yep, I'm still wide awake. It's fine.
All right. Well, how are you going to wind down then? You're probably all wound up from listening to those wonderful long answers.
I've got this is tea now. All right. So you've got to regulate these things.
Yeah. Yes. Sleepy game tea. All right. Well, Dan, once again, thank you for co-hosting the show. And we'll see all the rest of you next week at our regularly scheduled time on Floss Weekly.